What's up, Tad Pals? We're back. Another That's a Dive. I'm Kyle Martino. I've got producer Jorge in the studio with me. Our first dramatic Premier League weekend. First weekend was kind of mostly as expected. Some great performances. Went as planned. Yeah. I mean, this was a dramatic weekend. Yeah. Second match day. It gets crazy. And we're going to get into that in the topics today. Before we get into the topics, though, let's get into your reviews. Again, rate the pod. It's so good when you rate it. Again, PJ and I have no idea why. It just bumps us up. More people see it. Just do it. And this season, we're doing a new thing. So include your rating and add a stadium around the world that you've never been to that you want to go see a game in. And we picked a fun one this time. And it's Martin Gravely, and he said the first team I ever supported was, and I'm going to butcher names here, so Martin, you're going to have to maybe send me like a voice note or something on Twitter. Urawa Reds, the Red Diamonds, aren't they called, right?
That's their full name, yeah.
The Red Diamonds. Reds. I mean, that's a good name.
They're colloquially known as the Reds. Kind of like, you know.
And they play in Saitama, 2002. So he included 2002, so I guess maybe the stadium was built for the World Cup.
Correct, it was, yeah.
Okay. So that's where he wants to go.
Yeah.
I mean, he supports the team, but he's never been to that stadium. So I'm curious how he found out about that team in the J League,
yeah.
How he became a fan, and has never been to the stadium.
That's true. And that's the type of stories we want to hear in these reviews, is why how did you end up a fan of that
totally.
Team?
Totally. So go further next time, Martin. You know what, Martin? Just put another review in,
yeah.
And then just
we'll
tell
it.
Us. Yeah, tell us how you became a fan of the Reds. Speaking of the Reds, they're going to be one of the topics today. We got three topics covering five teams. We'll talk the title race. Is it a two-horse race? Is it Manchester City-Liverpool? We will also talk the London Derby, Chelsea-Arsenal, a game where I think we learned stuff about both clubs there. And an exciting game because typically, you know, we build those up and they sometimes don't really deliver. That one delivered. It was a great game. But first, let's talk about the Reds, who are blue right now. Manchester United, are they in crisis, right? That's always the headline when stuff like this happens. A loss, first loss of the season, second game of the season at Brighton. Lot to get into here. So before they even got to the weekend, and we talked about it on the last podcast, things are not all well, right? And I went as far as to say, if Zinedine Zidane is interested and being the manager of Manchester United, do not wait. Hire him now. Fire Jose Mourinho. And I'd be curious to know the response from – I saw some responses on Twitter. There were a lot of United fans that said, I agree. A lot of United fans that said, come on, that's knee-jerky. It's not us. I mean, but here's the thing. The data points, everything that we see about what's going on right now at Manchester United, currently in the short term, and Jose Mourinho's entire – body of work in his long and very successful career, all the information tells you things are about to collapse. It's about to actually get worse, right? And that's what I said last weekend before the Brighton game. Things are about to get worse. Well, they got worse this weekend. Now, if a manager like Zinedine Zidane is interested in your club, don't miss out on it. I mean, the amount of managers that they've missed out on, Klopp, they could have Manchester United could have Klopp right now, and I promise you, Klopp would have Manchester United playing similar to the way we all enjoy watching Liverpool play. And I know that stings for Manchester United fans, that being your big rival, but hasn't spent a ton of money at all. I mean, they were at a net profit until this last window. You know, you can't miss out on some of these guys that can change your club and the ones you need. Also, players. They keep missing out on players. You know, players that Antoine Griezmann re-signs with Atletico Madrid. Now, maybe he was going to do that anyway, but I don't think Manchester United really ever had a chance at getting him. And, you know, if you know that things are going to fail, right, if you know it always happens, why is it different this time? So are you just being cocky and saying, we're Manchester United, that won't happen to us? I mean, have you watched what's happened since Sir Alex Ferguson left? I think if you're a Manchester United fan or you're Ed Woodward or you're the board or you're the Glazers and you think that way, you're really not appreciating how special Sir Alex Ferguson was, right? You're thinking it was about Manchester United. Now, that's a very special club. There was success before Sir Alex Ferguson got there. Mm-hmm. I mean, Sir Matt Busby, I mean, you know, there's history, there's success. But the modern-day Manchester United was built by Sir Alex Ferguson, and you can't expect that they're immune to the Mourinho collapse and the Mourinho effect. And here's the thing. If your answer is, if you're Ed Woodward or you're a Manchester United fan or you're the Glazers, the board, if your answer is, we're Manchester United, we don't fire a coach, you know, this early in the season, well, you also aren't the club, Sir Bobby Charlton said, that hires a guy like Jose Mourinho. So you did that. Yeah. I mean, you kind of are already on non-Manchester United ground in the fact that he's sitting in the dugout, that he's your manager. So I just think things are going to get worse. And where what's the source? Where do things blow up? What's the most combustible situation in every third season that goes the wrong way? It's a star player and he butting heads. And so the Pogba stuff, right? We have so much information and we're just two match days into the season. We already have some pretty provocative quotes from Paul Pogba saying, I'll get fined if I basically say what I think.
Yep.
You know, the tweets that are a little cryptic
yeah.
don't really seem very positive. And then, you know what? He had a bad performance. Mm-hmm. At Brighton, he did not perform well. He's wearing the armband now, which I think is a great move from Jose Mourinho. I think it's good to try to give him that olive branch. And
though
it helps.
Jose will say it's only
because
temporary.
Valencia's gone. Yeah. Yeah. But still, he could have given it to De Gea. He could have given it to someone else. Mm-hmm. It was a smart move from Jose Mourinho. He is trying to bridge things, I believe. And Paul Pogba has a bad game. And listen, when you're Paul Pogba, the money he's on, the armband, Manchester United, everyone being critical of him not having the freedom and being critical of Jose Mourinho, you have to perform. And he didn't, but he did say this after the game.
The attitude that we have today is, I don't think we deserve to win. They had more anger than us, and I think they show in the pitch. Then I put myself first, that my attitude wasn't right enough. Keep trying, keep pushing, and it's going to be a big lesson for us.
So I love those quotes, okay? That's good. That's what your captain should do. Mm-hmm. My big question is why? Why didn't you have the attitude? Why didn't the group have the attitude? I mean, you don't even have to match Brighton's attitude with the amount of talent that you have. And again, it's not disrespectful to these clubs, but the disparity is enormous. Mm-hmm. The quality that was put on the field for Manchester United. This wasn't a team, Brighton, that bunkered in. You know, we watched Brighton against Manchester City start last campaign against, remember that? I mean, they bunkered in. Mm-hmm. I mean, they almost never touched the ball.
Yep.
They were absolutely terrified and actually performed pretty well and frustrated Manchester City. But again, attrition got the best of them. They went after Manchester United. Brighton wasn't scared. I think they sensed what Paul Pogba just said. Why? Who? Mm-hmm. I mean, that's the big question is whose fault is that?
I mean, the obvious finger to point is going to go to Jose Mourinho, but it's still, you look at players like Bailly and Lindelof, who looked great against Leicester City, and then complete opposite this against Brighton. So how does that change in less than, or in a week, basically?
Well, not only that, yeah, I mean, a really good point. And also, Jose Mourinho will say, or Manchester United fans will say, these guys aren't good enough. You know, Bailly and Lindelof, not good enough. Well, you know what the big problem is? They're your guys. You bought them.
Yeah.
So I'm sorry, you can't just test it out and bring it back to the dealership and say, I didn't want this. Mm-hmm. I want a different one. I mean, they're your guys. You have to make them better. Yeah. And here's the thing is, Lindelof is a ball-playing center back, which is interesting that he wanted to go and get him in the first place because defensive issues have always been there. He's just really fluid and loves to play out of the back, something they don't do from time to time or Jose Mourinho doesn't like from time to time. Eric Bailly is a project, and I promise you he's a better center back than Otamendi. Eric Bailly is a better center back than Otamendi in almost every category. And Pep Guardiola has turned Otamendi into a classy, trustworthy center back, which none of us thought he could do. Eric Bailly would be a Rolls Royce with Pep Guardiola. Yeah. I mean, that's my big problem is not only did you buy these guys so you can't complain about it, but you're not making anyone any better. And the substitutions, I mean, just kind of throwing things on the field. And we've seen this since he's been there. You know, Fellaini comes in, and Rashford comes in, and you know, he just kind of throws different weapons. It's like going in your closet and putting all your favorite clothes on and not seeing how they look together. I mean, it's incongruous. It's not clear what their plan is. And Brighton just absolutely outplayed them. So then the Pogba thing now is going to come back and be more of an issue. And what doesn't help it is Paul Pogba's agent. And I've gone on my super agent rant before. Yep. Go back to last season's podcast. I just can't stand these guys. They want to be the stars. the fact that they can represent the buying club, the selling club, the manager, the player in the same deal is crazy. But this guy's running his mouth, and it's the same guy that ran his mouth against, you know, Pep Guardiola, who, by the way, Pep Guardiola then said Mino Raiola, Paul Pogba's agent, shopped Paul Pogba to Manchester City and Pep last winter window. So here's another problem. You know, this guy running his mouth, Mino Raiola, and by the way, come on, people want to give him credit for getting getting Paul Pogba to Manchester United. I mean, it was just the easiest thing to orchestrate. So Paul Pogba, of course, wants to go back to the club that he was an academy player and felt he deserved to play regularly, went away to Juve on a free. So Juve sold him full profit for a record fee, and he goes back to where he wants to go. Everyone gets what they want, and Mino Raiola got an insane amount, something like £20 million for that transaction. Give me a break that this guy's a great agent because of that. He's a great agent because he's convinced Paul Pogba to stay with him when he acts like this.
Yeah.
But a guy like that, an agent like that, is like a realtor that shows up at your dream house that you found on Zillow yourself, takes a commission, and then spends every day after that trying to get other people to buy the house from underneath you for less than you paid for. It's like, come on.
Should we read the tweet just so people...
Yeah, read the tweet if you didn't see it. This is Mino Raiola, the agent of Paul Pogba.
Paul Scholes should become sports director and advise Woodward to sell Pogba. Would be sleepless nights to find Pogba a new club, and then at Paul Pogba, just to make sure, in case, you know, he said Pogba two times before that he hadn't seen that.
I don't understand why a player would put up with... I mean, some of these agents are incredible. Some of them have relationships and can broker things, and others are they're guys that are commodities and trying to force transactions.
You know,
and I think this is a mess for everyone involved, for Manchester United, Paul Pogba, and Jose Mourinho. By the way, I'm running the clock, which is why I think that we're.
That we're going
you
heavy.
You should be running the clock. Never give me the clock.
Well, before we move on, though, you know, just because we mentioned Pogba saying I could say certain things, but I would get fined, and I wonder if this was his way of getting around that.
So, using his agent a mouthpiece to protect him.
I guess Raiola, but also what he said post match when he said the attitude wasn't right. But he says, you know, I take the blame myself. So he kind of makes it seem like he's partially at fault. But when you start saying the attitude of the rest of the team isn't right, then people are going to start to question the manager. Is this his indirect way of putting more pressure on Mourinho?
Well, no, but here's the thing is, like, Paul Pogba's not afraid recently to be provocative and say things.
Especially that World Cup trophy.
Yeah, right.
And, you know, so, hanging the mantle looks nice.
Yeah, he can defend himself. And also, like, you don't get your agent to defend you against Manchester United legend. It's just he's gonna see him around, and it doesn't make any sense.
I don't think
Paul Pogba would do that. Listen, that's possible, right? Because people do that, and I think some players love an agent that goes out and fights their fights for them. But this whole thing's just a mess, and honestly, it's a ticking time bomb.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think he asked Raiola to, can you please put these tweets out for me? But
it's kind of implied that Mino Raiola's got his back and he's going to do something like that.
I just wonder if he looks at players, like you mentioned Griezmann, sticking with Atletico. And by the way, he did that whole production where he announced that he's going to stay, where they released a video. And then you see Courtois lately. Seems like he pretty much forced that move, Chelsea, to make that move to get to Real Madrid. I wonder if he looks around and sees other players pretty much looking like they're in good control of what their future is with the clubs that they're going to play for, and he's trying to see if the best way he can do that, whether it means he wants to stay at Manchester United or he's trying to find a way to get a new manager in there.
I think for sure there has been a line drawn in the sand, and I'm not saying by Paul Pogba, but from Paul Pogba's camp to say, mirror him. Mm-hmm. That has to have happened. Mirror him because I'm not enjoying myself right now. This relationship's not good. We're not winning. We're not playing well. This is getting worse. And by the way, there are a lot of clubs that want me. Yep. I just won the World Cup. So I think that line has been drawn in the sand. And Ed Woodward is a commercial guru. He's not going to be choosing Jose Mourinho over Paul Pogba. The interesting thing is, now we're really blowing through the time, but the interesting thing is technical director. That term has been thrown out. Director of football, technical director. Manchester United has never had one. One of the only clubs kind of left that hasn't modernized in that way. It's interesting that Arsenal hired the quote-unquote technical director, right? They filled that role before they fired Arsene Wenger. Now, that's a different scenario, right? Because that's a legend. That's 20 years. I just wonder if that's the role that they want to get in place first. They want to go hire a technical director, a director of football, so that whoever they get, whether it's Zidane or someone else, mm-hmm. understands what they're coming into, rather than trying to bring that person in after the fact. So if that role happens, and reports keep coming out that it's getting more and more serious, if that happens in the next month or two, I'd say that the clock starts for Jose Mourinho.
Yeah, no, for sure.
So we'll see. Speaking of clock starts on topic two, Chelsea Arsenal. So I think these two teams, and I said it in the preview show in the first part of the season, I think they're kind of the hardest to predict, especially, I mean, definitely of the top six, mm-hmm. but they're kind of, I think they have the biggest swing potential, where how quickly can the two managers, Sarri and Emery, get their blueprint across, you know, get their philosophy across to a group that they didn't build, right? Mm-hmm. And that's the hardest thing is to parachute in as a manager and fix something when you don't really have your ingredients yet. So I'd say if you're picking winners and losers, obviously Chelsea win this game 3-2, but I think Arsenal have improved the most. I remember Robbie Musto was talking about it at halftime. I was sitting there in the living room and saying, yeah, totally agree. I see progression. Mm-hmm. We were there, and I did the game with Arlo, where Manchester City, you wouldn't say dismantled them, but it was a pretty easy win, but not any easier than it was the last time Manchester City were at the Emirates. So I don't know why people expected first game of the season against a powerhouse like Manchester City for it to be much different. There were issues in that game, and it was overall poor performance. This was better. I mean, this is Stamford Bridge. This is on the road. I love that he's stuck with Guendouzi. Mm-hmm. You know, a young player who didn't have a great debut in his home stadium. He stuck with them, and I think we saw a couple of moments where that's why he's there. I mean, mm-hmm. that's something special. It's a deep playmaker like they haven't had. There's a bit of class. He plays positive. He had an incredible through ball mm-hmm. to that first sitter that Aubameyang missed.
And then I believe you might have retweeted this out. There's a clip that's going around
of him slamming the ground.
Tactical view of that, where you see the nice pass go through, and then you see Aubameyang miss it, and he just drops to the ground and starts
Guendouzi.
Pounding his fist on the ground.
Yeah, because
it's just interesting to see that from a 19-year-old acting like, you know, he's, you know, getting frustrated with players that are almost 10 years older than him or whatever.
So I think he's also frustrated because it was a peach of a pass. Mm-hmm. I mean, just a wonderfully perfectly timed, dissecting, anticipating the movement of a space with a third runner. I mean, it was just, it demonstrated mm-hmm. the mind, the vision, the technique that this young player has. I'm glad he stuck with him. Arsenal are better when Torreira comes on the field. Mm-hmm. So the second game in a row, he hasn't started, and he comes on and just gives them a bit more balance. Now, maybe he's not ready. You know, had a World Cup, and you know, we don't know what's going on behind mm-hmm. the scenes. Maybe it's just taking time to adjust. But I said it when I was doing the game with Arlo. He's the future. That's what they need to balance things out. He's a great ball winner. He's quick and concise with the ball. Plays, you know, has a great sense of tempo. He covers a lot of ground. And he frees Guendouzi up to be a bit more of a guy that can venture forward. All in all, I saw improvement, especially across the back line for Arsenal, because now, does that still need to go? Yeah, mm-hmm. I think that's going to be the next big transfer window, is to get
some center
at
backs.
Least one, if not two, big center backs for them. But, I see things kind of coming together a bit for Emery.
You know, it's interesting with Torreira, too. He's only 22 years old, and Guendouzi's 19. So if that partnership can really start to grow, that could be – you're talking about a midfield pairing that could last for 10 years at Arsenal.
I mean, that's what they did with Cesc, right? I mean, unfortunately, they lost him at one point, but they were putting everything behind, and he had his highs and lows. You know, mm-hmm. he debuted at 16 years old, and they stuck with him. Yeah. And I like some of the pieces. The Mesut Ozil thing is still an issue. He was better. You know, you saw work rate. He got to play the role he was switched in the first game. Mm-hmm. He played wide. At the Emirates in the opener.
He played more like number 10.
Yeah, more number 10 with two protectors
but
behind him. That's what he wants.
But he took him off.
Which I like. I like that he did that. Because, you know, Arsene, he just had such kid gloves with Mesut Ozil. Mm-hmm. I think you just need to treat him like a big boy and say, yeah, if you're not getting it done, I'm sorry, you're going to come off. Because look what we have on the bench, whether it's Ramsey or if Mkhitaryan doesn't start. Mkhitaryan was better in this game. you know, Aubameyang moving to the left and Lacazette coming on, there are options where Mesut Ozil, they can't carry him anymore as talented as he is.
What did you make of when he came off, though? Because we, I know it's a lot of times when we're watching substitutions happen, and the camera just happened. But Ozil kind of did it to himself because he took forever to walk off the field. It just, you know, you like you said, Wenger handled him with such care.
I don't mind that.
No, but I'm saying, is this going to be a problem with Ozil where he's going to act like a baby if he's not playing?
No, I meant like I don't mind that.
You don't mind the body language and stuff?
Yeah, I mean,
I guess that's the competitive spirit maybe coming out.
Listen, if you're doing it all the time and you're making it about you, yeah, it's a problem. But yeah, he was pissed. He wanted to stay out there, and I like seeing him have that a bit. I know how he demonstrates it. Looks pouty and looks selfish. But
we talked about that last week. His body language is.
Yeah, I mean, it's just kind of the way he is. And by the way, it translates to the way he plays. Mm-hmm. He is kind of casual, which makes him so good. Yeah, I mean, I think that Emery right out of the gate is just making it clear to everyone, new boss, not the same as the old boss. Mm-hmm. So that one I liked. And you know, I think that at the end of the day, he's not entirely sure, and maybe it's different week in, week out. If they're a 4-3-3 or 4-2 or 4-2-3-1, I think he wants to play 4-2-3-1, which Mesut Ozil would love. Mm-hmm. But they're just more dynamic, cover more ground with a Ramsey playing ahead of, you know, you get kind of both out of him every time. And I also like that he sat Ramsey, who's in contract disputes. Yeah. So. Emery doing good. Sorry. Defensive issues, man. We talked about it in the first podcast. David Luiz, as much as he's going to love him playing out of the back, it's going to be a liability. You know, there were so many times, especially down the side of the field that David Luiz is on as a center back, coming down that right side, and it was Bellerin doing a great job of overlapping Mkhitaryan sometimes. It was just so easy to get in behind them and then cut the ball back. And David Luiz was successful in their title campaign a couple seasons ago as a free player. And I just think he's gonna be an issue. And I also, as good as Jorginho is, and he's terrific, he's got great tempo, he's calm on the ball, he distributes the ball really, really well, he transitions them from the back through the lines really well, he doesn't cover a lot of ground, he's not a great goal scorer, he was great at Napoli. I just think N'Golo Kante, when he plays deeper, he gives you two guys, so you can take a bit more risk. And N'Golo Kante, a bit advanced, and this isn't even an insult, but it is to N'Golo Kante. He's just one guy. Yep. You know what I mean? It isolates him a bit. He also seemed a bit unsure of where he was supposed to be when they were in possession. Bakayoko had that issue, which is one of the reasons he didn't get into the side offense. So he seemed a bit confused where he was. And that's okay. He'll get that with time. But, you know, If you don't have him as someone that can hunt the ball down centrally, you're making it difficult for him to cover ground that he can. You're also doing what teams want you to do. Mm-hmm. I mean, teams want N'Golo Kante to leave the center of the park.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I think he's naturally always going to drift back. You can try and play him in a more attacking position or out wide, with like he's been playing more to the right now. But I think just the way he plays, he's always going to drift back to that role. But then that eliminates what his purpose is, what Sarri wants him to be, which is that you know, pressing higher, be more attacking minded. So it just seems, like you said, it seems strange. Like they should kind of flip, you would think, Jorginho and Kante, but he loves Jorginho.
Or just play them as a two. I know he doesn't want to do that, but just
well, that's the thing. He keeps playing Ross. He started Ross Barkley these first two games as the other midfielder.
Yeah.
Do you see that maybe he tries to adapt his system a little bit so that way he could play Hazard, Willian, Pedro, and Morata, and then you play those two behind?
I mean, possibly, but what he did at Napoli was so specific. Mm-hmm. You know, he's just trying to recreate that. And he has kind of all the pieces but the right number nine. And Morata, listen, gets a goal. I just don't think he's going to be what he wants him to be in that system. He wants a very mobile, I mean, essentially a false nine, really. And he can put other players, and you know, he can play Hazard, Willian, and Pedro as the top three. Yep. I mean, and he will at times this season. I think Barkley looks fit. He looks sharp. He's not taking as much risk as he did when he was at Everton, which we kind of loved about his game. Mm-hmm. He was irreverent and took people on and tried to create things. You know, should have had a goal. I mean, he looks good. So I think he's going to get reps. Kovacic looked good when he comes on. Mm-hmm. Very smooth with the ball. You know, moves it quickly. He's the perfect Sarri guy. The Kepa thing's interesting. He was a bit shaky a couple times.
Yeah.
We're going to scrutinize him like crazy because, you know, he's the most expensive goalkeeper in the world, especially when you have Petr Cech on the other side, who's shaky with his feet but made a couple huge saves.
Yeah.
But the Mkhitaryan shot, you know, listen, that's a hard save. Mkhitaryan catches that cleanly, bends it around a defender. He gets a hand to it, but Petr Cech got a hand to the almost a similar save during the game too, and he had a strong hand and kept it out. So everyone's going to look at that, and you know the pressure's going to start on this young kid.
Well, and Courtois too. You sometimes when you see that go in, people are like automatically just say, "Oh well, Courtois would have saved that."
What was the ridiculous goal Eriksen scored? Remember on was it Caballero or?
Yes, it was Caballero. Yeah.
And everyone said Courtois would have saved that, and it was just like, give me a break. The thing like at its height was 20 feet over Caballero's head and then dipped under the bar.
That's the thing. When these other goalkeepers that we see make great saves from time, you know, all the time, like De Gea or Courtois, when they make a mistake, we don't really criticize them because we know they have the track record of making these great saves. So, like you said, you see Caballero or you see Kepa make a mistake, they're going to get criticized right away.
But, you know, Chelsea see it out. 3 points. Important 3 points. And also, you know, that's first time ever. Or not first time ever. Arsene Wenger never lost to the first two Premier League games in a row. Now, I challenge that he had two harder first games. I mean, the champions from the last two seasons. Yep. I mean, how often did that happen to Arsene Wenger? Yeah. I'd guess in 22 years, once, if ever. Mm-hmm. So that's a bit
Just real quick,
misleading.
Just because you mentioned Kovacic and Barkley, and then Cesc Fabregas might still come in and play a part in the team. Is N'Golo Kante's spot in the starting 11 in jeopardy?
I think so, where he's being played. Yeah. I mean, because now he needs to provide assists and score goals, and that's not really his game.
It's just crazy to think, though, that he won Player of the Year two seasons ago and just won the World Cup with France, where he was arguably one of the most important players on their team. And it's hard to picture him all of a sudden just being taken out of a starting 11 from any
team. They've
got
a lot of depth there.
Yeah.
And the way he wants to play, N'Golo Kante isn't indispensable. That's where I'm at. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, listen, Paul Pogba is the captain and the record signing, and Scott McTominay started over him a few times.
Yeah.
So, who knows? Last topic. Do we have a two-horse title race?
Yeah. I think this is just going to be a regular check-in thing probably throughout the season.
What do you think?
I think so. I mean, a lot of people probably say Tottenham are still in there, especially if they've got two wins.
But you think it's at least a two-horse race?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. I definitely.
You're not one of the people that thinks this is a runaway again for Manchester City.
Not yet. No.
Okay.
No. I mean it's early. I just wonder if it's going to be a three-horse race.
That's the big question, because I've got Liverpool winning it. I mean, listen, Kevin De Bruyne gets injured. They've got a lot of. I mean, David Silva played his first game, which was a really special moment because of everything with his son, and that was a really beautiful day, and he was excellent and showed how important he is to the side. Mendy is it changes them.
Yeah.
He brings this incredible quality where now Pep is trying to mold him into something else, where first game we saw him play inverted a lot, and then we saw him back in a wide position, you know, getting chalk on his boots, serving in early balls behind the back four. Mm-hmm. I just wonder, Pep's going to push the envelope. I mean, he's going to try to improve on last season, which is riskier. He's going to bring new players into the side. I think John Stones will get more playing time. I think Bernardo's going to play more. I think he's going to rotate the deep guy. You know, Fernandinho's not going to play every game like he did before. So I think that with the Champions League and that focus and the need to prove that point, I just think there's a window for Liverpool there to shock everyone. And I really don't think it'd be that shocking.
And I don't think so.
I just look at the project of Liverpool, and it's been perfectly executed. And I didn't think Brendan Rodgers should have been fired. I remember I made that big argument for him right when he was let go. But they're so much better now. I mean, the restructuring about recruitment and everything that happened at the same time as when they fired Brendan Rodgers and brought in Jurgen Klopp has helped too. The recruitment's been excellent. Naby Keita is the real deal. Mm-hmm. Makes them better. You have Henderson not playing a ton. I mean, he struggled with injuries, and they've done a great job of trying to fill that role now that Emre Can isn't there.
Yep.
And, you know, it's Wijnaldum, who's been playing it mostly, and that, you know, that trio in the middle looks deep, looks like it can rotate. I mean, Van Dijk is the real deal. I mean, the reason they could spend that money on Van Dijk, which they overspent for Van Dijk, was just because they'd done such great business that mm-hmm. they could afford to overspend on a position that they absolutely needed. Yep. Goalkeeper, center back. Overpaid for both those players. That's fine because we've got Robertson, right? Yep. No one thought that was going to work out. We went and got a player off of a relegated team in Wijnaldum. We've got Milner, who everyone thought his career was basically fading away. You've got a youth academy product in Trent Alexander-Arnold. Yep. You've got Gomez. These are players not to, I always go back to Jose Mourinho, right? These are players that would not be good enough, right? These are players that not only Jose, but other managers would say, nah, I got to buy the finished product. Let's do it. There's pressure on us. So I just think it's building. It's gaining momentum. And even in a game they didn't really perform at their best against Crystal Palace, which was much more about a really good Crystal Palace than a bad Liverpool, you know, just a great start neck and neck.
No, yeah, that was the key. I think, like you just said, that they didn't look great. They didn't rely on their attacking completely. They were bailed out by a couple big saves by Alisson.
That's what they paid for.
And I think I saw Steve Nicol, Liverpool legend, put out a tweet. It's like, it's amazing what happens when you have a great goalkeeper or something like that. Yeah. So you could tell he's sitting back.
Liverpool really fans are psyched. That, so. Yeah. So the Spurs thing, I think, I mean, listen, a lot of people don't have Spurs in the top four. Mm-hmm. But I think they'll be the best of the rest and push that. You know, that two-horse race. I think they'll be there at Christmas. I really do. Because the jolt of the new stadium, which is delayed a little bit, you know, it's can they have a great second half of the campaign? Because the last few years, they've been the most consistent team. So I really don't expect them to drop off that much. But they've got a lot of ground to gain up off of last season if they want to be in a title race.
Yeah, I mean, I think the key things you saw from this past game, too, is you saw Lucas Moura coming and score a goal.
Yeah, and playing in a bit of a different role. I mean, mm-hmm. he's essentially being used as a strike partner for Harry Kane.
Yeah, and then Trippier takes the free kick.
Oh, so
he's,
good.
He's, I think that free kick he scored in the semifinals.
Has given him some credit over Eriksen.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, you'd be laughing if we said a year ago that Trippier's going to take free kicks over Eriksen.
We watched Eriksen when we were over there. Was that last season? We went to Spurs training, and we watched Eriksen take free kicks, mm-hmm. and it was him and Lamella and Dele Alli and Harry Kane. And
so Trippier wasn't even in the conversation.
And Trippier wasn't even there. Yeah. But also, Eriksen was clear, like by far the best free kick taker, you know, hitting him over the plastic wall just nonstop.
Yeah.
So Trippier, yeah.
That's what. Yeah, it just seems like they had a couple little extra weapons that
and
maybe
Alderweireld.
He's back in.
Right? Back in the mix. Was put in the, you know, in timeout for a little while, and seems like he's back on board.
Lamella came in. He made that great run to set up Kane on the goal. So, I mean, these players, even though they were on the team last year, they might be having different roles or making bigger impacts than they did last season. And maybe that those zero signings from a few weeks ago doesn't look as bad.
Defensive midfield. I'm still a bit worried about defensive midfield, where Dyer is – I think maybe rotating him a lot has disrupted his play and his confidence slightly. Onyama, we know about, injured. Dembele just he's getting up there. Mm-hmm. I mean, the miles, he's still a fantastic player, a joy to watch. But you know, he's just not being trusted as much. So I think that's the one area in front of their back three, which is a great back three, that they're a bit vulnerable.
Just back to Man City real quick to kind of, I guess, wrap up the title race.
Yeah.
Do you think Pep might try and get too cute with his tactics sometimes, or try to change it up too much? He might get bored. I remember, I think when Cesc Fabregas came in, and you had this issue where you had Xavi, Iniesta, Busquets, and Fabregas. Mm. How are you going to play all four when you only have three midfielders?
Yeah, you try to find
and
a way.
I think you tried to play three at the back, but then you'd lose Dani Alves or whatever. So, is it, especially with all these players he has, like this three at the back worked because he wanted to put part of it was to put Aguero and Jesus up top, and obviously worked. They scored six goals. Do you think there could be situations like that where he tries to maybe overthink it and he starts doing different things that could backfire?
Yeah, I think so. Especially since they won the title already, right? Mm-hmm. So he kind of has license to
mess around a little bit.
I mean, it's rare to repeat. So, of course, he'll want to do that. He's never failed to do it at any club he's ever been at. So I just think he's going to want to improve off of last season. And the only way to do that is to start to get cute and start to – you know, to be the mad scientist that supposedly he is in his house, where he tucks himself away in a corner watching video and you know, figuring out ways to dismantle sides in more poetic and artistic ways. I mean, he's going to try that. And there's one issue, which isn't really an issue. It happened last year. But Sané.
Yeah.
Leroy Sané. Like, something's going on there where didn't have a World Cup, you know, should be fit, ready to go, chomping at the bit to start the season. And he's not getting a lot of burn. Yeah. So I wonder if he's getting taught a bit of a lesson.
Could be. By the way, I don't know if you've caught any of the Man City documentary.
I'm going to binge watch it like crazy.
I've only watched the first episode so far, but there's just so many clips, not to give too much away, but where they see Pep at like a tactics board, and you just see him by himself. He just starts moving little circles around. He'll just move the opponent, and then it'll be like, oh, he moves the other guy to the next spot.
He's insane.
But it's just him by himself. Yeah. Like, he's not even – there's no other players around, other coaches.
It's like Beautiful Mind when he's drawing on the window.
It really does look like that when you see
him. But he's like that. Yeah. I mean, I know we've talked about it before. When we sat down with him, I mean, honestly – I see how people join cults. Like, he could have asked me to shave my head to look like his, and I wouldn't have questioned it. I'd have been like, yeah, give me the buzzers. Yeah. Let's do this. I mean, he's eccentric. He's charismatic. He's thoughtful. He's passionate. And you care to hear what he thinks. And when he goes to describe something or answer a question, I mean, it leaves you speechless. And that's me who can't shut up. I mean, it was just, holy cow, the way his mind works. It's kind of like, what are those things where it says, you know, if yes, if no, go here. And then if yes, if no, go here. You know, the kind of know, the diagram of like the flow chart of decision making. His brain kind of works in that like
24/7
weird programming way. Yeah. So, man, Liverpool have their work cut out if they want to keep them from repeating. But that is the pod for today, guys. Again, don't forget to leave your reviews. Thanks for listening. Thanks for liking. Thanks for disliking. I mean, just thank you. And stand your feet.